Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and we're here to talk about IRAs payable to trusts after the SECURE Act. In late December 2019, the President signed the SECURE Act, bringing sweeping changes to our retirement system. A very important part of the SECURE Act is the 10-year rule, effective January 1st, 2020. Under prior law, you are able to take IRA distributions over your life expectancy. Under current law, you're required to use basically a 10-year rule. This has dramatic changes on how we're going to do estate planning going forward. We have to begin with a conversation on conduit versus accumulation trusts. You recall, in an accumulation trust, the trustee has the privilege or the responsibility of retaining funds in the trust. In a conduit trust, the dollars go from the IRA to the trust, and a nanosecond later, they go out to the beneficiaries. So that's the issue with the conduit trust. So we do have to be very mindful of how the conduit trusts are going to work. Now, one of the problems we're going to have is what we call the conduit trust disaster. That's basically, I die, my IRA goes to a conduit trust, and I thought the distributions were going to go to children or grandchildren over the next 30 or 40 years. Instead, I find out that it's all going to happen within the next 10 years. Now, clearly, all of us have clients where that is a very unpleasant thought, a disaster, if you will. Now, remember, anyone that died prior to 1/1/20 is going to be in a position where they will use the old law. Here's what happened with this new statute. This is the way it's drafted right now, is that the SECURE bill, specifically section, and this is a coincidence, section 401 of the SECURE bill was layered on top of section 401 of the Internal Revenue Code. And what they did in the SECURE bill is they added a parens cap H to the 401A9 rules. And that said, when you have a designated beneficiary or an eligible designated beneficiary, that you would use a different set of rules. It basically said you'll use, for a designated beneficiary, use a 10-year rule, and for an eligible designated beneficiary, like a spouse or a minor child or a disabled or chronically ill person or a person that's less than 10 years younger than the decedent, you're going to use a longer stretch period. We'll go through each of those. But all of the old rules, when you had a non-designated beneficiary, appear to still be in place. That means, again, this is my analysis. I'm not sure it's right. I feel fairly solid about this, but there's still some debate among the IRA experts. But where this would lead us is that a non-designated beneficiary would have a different result than a designated beneficiary. The non-designated beneficiary rules would take us back to the prior code sections, and you'd end up still with the 5-year rule or the ghost rule. Now, some people believe that a technical correction may be needed to fix that, but I'm going to proceed today with that in mind. Keep in mind, under prior law, if you died before your required beginning date and you went to a designated beneficiary trust, you'd end up with life expectancy. If you died on or after your required beginning date and you went to a designated beneficiary trust, you'd end up with the life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary. In both before and after, you use the life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary. If you died before your required beginning date with a non-designated beneficiary, you'd have the 5-year rule. And if you died on or after your required beginning date, you'd end up with the ghost rule. That really breaks down to 3 rules. Let me go through them. If you have a designated beneficiary, you get to use life expectancy. This is prior law. If you have a non-designated beneficiary, you die before your required beginning date, 5-year rule. If you have a non-designated beneficiary and you die after your required beginning date, then you have the owner's ghost life expectancy rule. Obviously, the Secure Bill changed some of that and led us down a path of where we have the 10-year rule. Simply put, you die, you leave your IRA to a child, the 10-year rule applies. You die, you leave the IRA to your grandfather, 10-year rule. Doesn't matter that he's 97 years old, you end up with the 10-year rule. Now, there are exception beneficiaries. This is very, very important. This class of beneficiaries, or these classes, are allowed to use a slightly different set of rules. Your surviving spouse can use life expectancy, or she could just do a rollover. He could just do a rollover. Children under the age of majority have a special rule that they get to use life expectancy until they reach their majority, and then they jump over to the 10-year rule. Disabled and chronically ill people, including trusts for disabled and chronically ill people, will get to use a life expectancy rule. And then there's an individual not more than 10 years younger than the employee who will get to use the life expectancy rule. So we know we want to stay away from, whenever possible, the 10-year rule. And there aren't many places to do that. When we come back to all this, we have to remember that conduit trusts will continue to exist, but they will not be very efficacious unless someone falls into one of the eligible categories. Now, this needs to be clarified by the IRS in undoubtedly upcoming regulations. Right now, the eligible designated beneficiaries, that group of people, would include a spouse, a child under the age of majority, disabled person, chronically ill person, or an individual not more than 10 years younger than the employee. The question becomes, if you name your IRA to a conduit trust for your spouse, are you allowed, is the trustee allowed to use the spouse's life expectancy in the same manner as if you had named the spouse outright? Right now, the experts are generally espousing that you would be able to ignore the trust and use the spouse's life expectancy. The same thing would occur for a child or an individual not more than 10 years younger. Now, the disabled and the chronically ill person, that is very clear that whether it's accumulation or a conduit trust, you do get to use life expectancy, because there's actually part of the statute, the new statute, specifically carves out disability trusts and chronically ill trusts. So that's an important thing for all of us to embrace and understand. So where are we on all this? Where we are is, when you name a designated beneficiary, you have a 10-year rule. When you name an eligible designated beneficiary, you'll get to use something closer to life expectancy, very clear for disabled and chronically ill people. You can use a trust. For minors, spouses, and a person whose life expectancy is within 10 years of the IRA owner, it's also likely that with a conduit trust, you can use the life expectancy rules. However, with a accumulation trust, it seems very logical that you'll be stuck with a 10-year rule. You'd never use a conduit trust for a disabled or chronically ill person. You'd always want to use an accumulation trust. For a minor child, if you could use a conduit trust, that's probably okay. A spouse in a first marriage, probably okay, depending upon your goals and objectives. A spouse in a second or third marriage, not so good, because all that money will go out to that spouse, and if he or she lives a very long, healthy life, there'll be nothing left for children from the first marriage. And again, a person within 10 years of the IRA owner's age, it depends on who that person is and how you want to benefit them. If they're your brother and you do not need that money to go to your own children, and you're willing to let your brother take care of his own children, then you may not care about using a conduit trust. But if you want to make sure it goes to a particular group of people, you're going to have to restrict that, and you might have to give up eligible designated beneficiary treatment. With the minor child rule, again, what we're worried about there is you can use, until that minor child reaches their majority, you're going to use life expectancy, and then you'll jump over to the 10-year rule. So that's a ton of ground for us to cover. Let's talk about naming trusts, though. So, of course, naturally, sometimes we're going to want to name a trust. And I think the best way to look at this is, how do you do this in a safe way? Now, if you have, again, a special person, an eligible designated beneficiary, we're going to have to follow some special rules. But what about just a trust for three adult healthy children? You would name the trust as a beneficiary. You would make sure you meet the designated beneficiary tests, and then you would have the 10-year rule. That's the best it's going to get, okay? If you were planning for a trust for your wife, first marriage, you could basically approach that in three different ways: an outright beneficiary, where your surviving spouse could do a rollover. You could leave it to a conduit trust, where we believe you could still use a life expectancy rule. Or you could leave it to a designated beneficiary trust, a non-conduit trust, where the 10-year rule would apply. You would probably never leave it to a non-designated beneficiary trust, although it seems like there might be a planning opportunity if a person died after their required beginning date of age 72 and they were less than 80 years old, they still might want to leave it to a non-designated beneficiary trust to trigger the ghost rule, which would be a little bit longer than the 10-year rule. This is far from clear, and there's still debate among the experts on this issue. The important thing to remember is the conduit trust will rarely be used except for eligible designated beneficiaries, because the conduit trust is going to result in all the money flowing to the beneficiaries much too quickly. Now, let's talk a little bit about this from big picture. There are three types of trusts. I want you to draw a big circle, and on the very outside of the big circle, write the words "all trusts." Now draw a smaller circle in there and write on that smaller circle "designated beneficiary trust." A designated beneficiary trust will be a subset of all trusts. And finally, inside that designated beneficiary, right at the center of your circle, you're going to put "eligible designated beneficiary trust." This is a subset of the designated beneficiary trust, and that's where spouses, minor children, or persons within 10 years of the IRA owner's age might be able to fit with a conduit trust. I'm going to emphasize that's a might. It's not 100% clear. And then finally, disabled beneficiaries and chronically ill beneficiaries do have a carve-out under the statute. They're going to be able to use life expectancy. And again, that's part of the SECURE Act. It's right in the statute. They give us very, very clear direction on how all that's going to work. Again, the key objective here is to understand these rules so you can prolong IRA payments over the longest possible period of time, thus increasing wealth to future generations. Well, we have covered a lot of ground today. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access additional information on the SECURE Act. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, CPA, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.